Number 21-11333, Davis versus Waller.
Please the court. My name is Leighton Moore, and I'm here on behalf of Don and Kathy Davis. Defendants in the district court have taken two different approaches to summary judgment in this case, both of which are erroneous, and each of which presents a different issue to the court on appeal. The district court held that defendants were entitled to summary judgment because, in the court's view, a reasonable officer could think it was constitutional to shoot someone who was known to be an innocent hostage. On the basis of that holding, the question before the court would be whether materially similar existing law gave notice to the officers that they could not shoot innocent people, or whether the practice of shooting innocent people violates the Constitution with such obvious clarity that no materially similar precedent is needed. And this court laid out that analysis recently in the opinion in Bradley versus Benton, case number 20-11509. That's last year's case, in an opinion for the court by Judge Brasher. Defendants, on the other hand, state in their brief that the issue before this court is whether they reasonably mistook Don for his captor, Ryan Arnold. Now, on that footing, the case presents a question of fact as to whether that mistake actually was made, a question that must be decided in Don's favor if the evidence conflicts, and a question of law as to whether the mistake, if made, was reasonable. And that question of law depends, in turn, on questions of fact as to what the circumstances of the mistake were. That is, especially, what the facts known to the officers were at the time.
Let me say at the outset, the facts of this case are horrific, obviously. There's no disagreement about that. But as I think about it, for instance, we said in Singletary, we have held that it is reasonable and therefore constitutionally permissible for an officer to use deadly force when he has probable cause to believe that his own life is in peril. For that reason, we have consistently upheld an officer's use of deadly force in cases where the officer reasonably believed his life was endangered by a suspect who used or threatened to use his car as a weapon. Isn't it reasonable to think that if there's a large vehicle that is already pushing other vehicles out of the way, then no matter who's driving that vehicle, it is a danger to the officers' lives?
Not in the circumstances of this case, Your Honor, or at least so a jury could find. As the district court itself noted, at the time that the officers fired, when Lieutenant Waller yelled, "Someone put some rounds on that truck," the cars were being pushed out of the way, and the officers were off to the side of the truck in a clear-cut field. This is an 84,000-pound log truck in first gear, creeping uphill on what the district court also described as a rutted dirt logging road, and surrounded by felled logs in this clear-cut field. So there's no way, once that truck has passed them, there's no way for it to turn around and follow them. Don is known to be an innocent hostage on the version of facts that the court has to take for granted at summary judgment.
Well, known by one of the officers to be an innocent hostage, right?
Known by Browder, and the jury could find by Waller, who was also listening to the sheriff's band radio at the same time Browder was, and the jury could find that he heard the same message Browder heard. He had the same opportunity to hear it. He denies now that he heard it, but the jury could find that that's not credible based on the fact that he was driving in his car listening to that very channel on the radio at the time the announcement was made. And so if he did know, and he's the one who yelled, I mean, the defendants state in their brief, I believe in their statement of facts, someone yelled something like, someone put some rounds on that truck. That's not what the record shows. Investigator Drake testified that it was Lieutenant Waller who yelled, someone put some rounds on that truck. So he's telling everyone to fire. And the jury could find that he knew that there's an innocent hostage in the truck, despite his denial in the litigation that he knew that.
Well, and you have, in addition to the truck, however fast it's moving, heading toward the cars and the officers, you also have Arnold shooting at least one shot out of the window of the truck. Isn't that right?
That's right. And no one disputes that the officers could have used deadly force against Arnold, at least unless they thought it was Arnold jumping out of the truck with his hands raised in surrender. I don't think they could shoot him then if he was visibly unarmed and trying to surrender. But during the time that he was in the truck, no one disputes that they could have used deadly force against Arnold. That does not give them probable cause to even seize Don. Now, they can try to stop the truck, but the question then is whether a reasonable officer could think it's reasonable to shoot someone that they know to be an innocent hostage rather than shooting out the tires of the truck or shooting the engine block of the truck, which would merely cause property damage.
Tell me about the situation involving Waller when he shoots Davis as he comes out of the truck. What are the facts in the light most favorable to the plaintiff?
So in the facts most favorable to the plaintiff, Don jumps out of the truck. The truck is stopped at that point. Don's no longer driving, obviously. He jumps out of the truck with his hands raised. Browder sees him. No one else fires except Waller. Browder sees him and testifies that he can tell that it's not Arnold, that it's an older gentleman, and that his hands are up. And Don testified that his hands were up. He was trying to surrender to the officers. He didn't want to get shot again. He had been shot multiple times. And Browder shot again. So the fact that Browder knew it wasn't Arnold would authorize a jury to conclude that Waller also had time to know it wasn't Arnold.
Where do we know how far away the shooter was when he shot? We're talking about Waller.
How far away Waller was?
Broward and Waller were not in the same physical position, I take it.
Not exactly.
Right. At the time your client exits the truck, he's shot by Waller, not Browder. There's no dispute about that.
Correct. That's right, Your Honor.
And we know that Waller and Browder are not physically standing next to each other. Waller is further away.
That's true. But we also know that Waller can see Don because he shoots Don.
Well, he shoots somebody getting out. Do we know whether he knows the person exiting is your client as opposed to the assailant?
He states that he did not know who it was. Other people who could also see him. I mean, we know that he saw the person he shot. And based on no one knew who Don was. None of the officers at the scene knew Don's name. They just knew from the dispatcher, or Browder admittedly knew, and the jury could find Waller also knew, that Arnold had taken a hostage on the logging site and was forcing the hostage to drive the truck. So when someone's jumping out of the driver's side of the truck, and...
Let me ask you this question in terms of, do we know what the sequence of events, how long it takes? As soon as your client jumps out of the cab, he gets shot, or is there some delay of time between the two acts? That is to say, the act of exiting and putting his hands up and getting shot for the ninth time or whatever.
We only know that it was long enough for Browder to see him and know that it wasn't Arnold. It was long enough for that recognition to be made. Waller testifies that he did not recognize that it wasn't Arnold. Now, even if that mistake was made, a jury also could find that it was not a reasonable mistake, given that Don was coming out of the driver's
side. Do we have any
side.
Testimony about how far Waller was from whomever was exiting the cab? Does Waller say, I was as far away as I am from you or the back of the courtroom? I was 50 feet, 100 feet, 200 feet, 20 feet. Is there any effort to explore with Waller or anyone else the distance between the last shooter, Waller, and your client as he exited the cab?
Your Honor, I don't have a specific answer for that question except to say that I believe it's in Waller's deposition, and I believe the distance is about from me to you.
Waller testify that the cab of the truck had passed him but not the entire truck? So he was somewhere within the length of the truck, I guess, between the door and the end of the truck.
Oh, that's true. Yes, Your Honor. He was on the driver's side, and when Don jumped out, there was Waller.
Let me ask you about another piece of Waller's testimony. He says that the door burst open and he simply shot towards the direction of the opening car door. What's the significance of that testimony in your view?
Well, if he didn't see a person at all, then the question for the jury would be whether it's reasonable to just shoot at the car door knowing that it's the driver's door and that Arnold was forcing the hostage to drive, knowing that there's a good chance you're shooting a hostage.
Would they get qualified immunity if they were shooting the hostage? The hostage is driving an 80,000-pound 18-wheeler at them. At gunpoint, he's being forced to do that. Could they shoot the hostage then?
Knowing
that the hostage was innocent and knowing that the hostage had a gun to his head and watching as that 80,000-pound truck is coming right at him, could they shoot the driver knowing the driver was innocent, he was not the assailant, and he was acting under duress?
In this hypothetical, to make sure that I understand
yes.
you, is there no way for the officers to get out of the path of the oncoming truck?
Well, it's happening rather quickly. Let's just say it's rather a debatable question of how close and the juxtaposition of time and space, but they reasonably feared for their lives as that truck is barreling down on them, and they could either stop the truck in their mind by shooting the innocent driver who was acting under duress or not.
I think in that situation, Your Honor, there would be a question as to whether it's a matter of straight up self-defense. And in that case, I think an officer can defend himself. We're not arguing that because the facts of this case...
But you understand why I raised the question, because this case is tragic, it's odd, and it kind of raises these kinds of Sophie choice kinds of problems where the utilitarian analysis might require you to shoot an innocent person for a greater good of saving other lives and preventing the escape, by an obviously murderous assailant.
Your Honor may remember the Yale Law Journal article about the trolley problem.
Yes, this is the trolley problem.
Right. Well, this case, however, I would argue is not the trolley problem.
Why not?
It's not the trolley problem because there is no situation that the jury could find. There is no situation that the officers faced in which there was a clear and necessary choice, as there is, you know, by excluding all other facts in the trolley problem. The engineer in the trolley problem has, by definition, no choice but to either kill five people or one person. The officers never faced that choice, or at least so a jury could find. They had other reasonable options. And if they knew it was an innocent person that they were killing, any other reasonable option had to be chosen.
Does the law require them to shoot at the tires or the block rather than shooting at the occupant driving in the cab?
If they know he's an innocent person, yes, Your Honor.
Is there any case that suggests that or says that?
No, Your Honor. It's just that
self-evident and so obvious that it would jump off the page at any real sentient officer.
Well, Vaughn versus Cox is an example of that, because in that case, the person was a suspect and actually had threatened the officer by ramming his car, and yet this court held that it wasn't reasonable for the officer to fire into the car. So that would be an example, Your Honor. Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Laura Lonis. I represent State Troopers Browder and Waller in this matter. When this shooting occurred, they were attempting to capture a violent felon who had been eluding them all afternoon. He had shot and ultimately murdered his pregnant girlfriend and her child, dumped her body on a roadway, taken his grandmother hostage and threatened to kill her, and had shot at Trooper Browder. They were a quarter of a mile away from one of the busiest roads in the country, in the county, sorry. A 42-ton fully loaded log truck was knocking their police cars out of the way, and gunfire was coming from the truck. There appeared to be only one person in the truck. Even if we assume we knew that this man had taken a hostage.
Wait, I thought Browder and at least one other officer testified he could tell there were two people in the truck.
No, Your Honor. Neither of these officers ever saw a second person in the truck until this thing was over. And in fact, Mr. Davis himself was very clear in his testimony that Mr. Arnold was in the floor of the truck pressing the gas pedal the whole time.
Okay.
These troopers reasonably thought that they were in danger, and although this was not addressed by my esteemed counsel in this case, in his argument, they also were entitled to think and did think that there was a danger if the truck got past them, because as I said, they were a quarter of a mile from one of the busiest highways in the county, and if Mr. Arnold was allowed to get on that road, then he was a threat to anybody he encountered there.
Was Mr. Davis inside or outside of the truck when he was shot?
Except for that final shot, he was inside the truck. It was still moving until that final shot was taken.
Before you move off that point, do I have it right? He was shot 9 times, 8 times in the cab, once when he exited.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Let me go back to what I asked you a minute ago. So Browder testified at page 133. I want to say we saw two people there. I'm not 100%. And then Matthews said, we got one coming down this dirt road here. Looks like there are two subjects in it. Although Mr. Waller does deny that he saw two people in the truck.
Yes, he did. And he also denies that he heard the radio transmission, that there was a hostage. And there's really nothing to contradict that. We certainly acknowledge that the radio transmission went out. But Waller, as everyone at the scene that day, was having trouble hearing the radio transmissions, and he was actually cycling between 3 different channels between the Georgia State Patrol and the Oglethorpe County Sheriff's Department and the Wilkes County Sheriff's Department, and he could only hear one at a time.
Let me ask the question this way. Would it not be fair to say, taking the evidence in a light most favorable to the non-moving party, that the officers knew or should have known that there were two people in that cab, in that truck?
Certainly for Trooper Browder, absolutely.
So the answer is yes, they should have known, or at least some of them should have known that.
They certainly knew that at one point that there were two people in the truck.
I'm not suggesting your argument turns on this point. I'm just
right.
Trying to be...
And I don't think it does, because even if they know that there's a hostage and that hostage is driving, that the truck is being used as a weapon, and they've got to stop that truck before it gets out to the main road where Ryan Arnold is a danger to anyone. And as conceded, if Ryan Arnold had been the person who had been shot, certainly there would be no question that this would be justified. But there's nothing in this court's clearly established case law that says that if you know that there's a hostage involved in the situation, that you cannot take a shot. The court has already discussed the case of Singletary.
In that case, the officer was directly in front of the vehicle. In fact, the headlights were shining on his leg. Isn't that right?
Correct. And there was a vehicle moving toward him, but the person who was shot was not the person who was driving the car. It was a passenger who had no known connection to him.
But it was undisputed that the shooter shot at the driver and merely hit the passenger in that case.
Correct.
Is that right?
And I would also refer to the court to the case of Cooper versus Rutherford, which is cited in our brief. It is admittedly an unpublished decision, and that cannot clearly establish the law, but an unpublished decision can show us where the law is not clear. And in that case, you had an armed bank robber who had committed a carjacking in a Wendy's drive-thru. The officer knew that there was a mother and two children in the car and still fired 24 rounds into the car in order to stop the vehicle from getting out and presenting a threat to the general public. And in that case, the court said that we cannot say that it is clearly established that the officer made the wrong choice. And that's not exactly on point with this case, but it's the closest case that we could find to this situation.
I want to ask you about the final shot that Waller fired. So as I understand the facts in the light most favorable to the plaintiff, at least two officers, Browder and Davis, mm-hmm. commented that they were able to tell that Davis did not have anything in his hands as he got out of the truck. It's undisputed that his hands were up when he got out of the truck. And from Waller's deposition, it sounds like he simply shot in the general direction of the driver's door when the door was opening. Why is that a reasonable use of deadly force?
Fair question, Your Honor. Let me point you to Mr. Davis's own deposition testimony. Part of this is on page 72, and part of this is on page 105. On page 72, Mr. Davis says, he shut the truck down and bailed out. I was getting out of there. And on page 105, he was asked, as you were getting out of the door, you believe you got shot in the shoulder. And he answered, that's right. So it's not when he's on the ground with his hands up. It's completely consistent with what Lieutenant Waller said, which is that the truck stopped, the door flew open, and he shot at the door.
Well, if there's a question of fact as to whether Waller knew that there was a hostage who was driving the truck, and he simply shoots when the door opens, how is that reasonable?
We don't know who's coming out of the truck if there's two people in there. And it's reasonable for him to assume that there's somebody, that we know that there's somebody in there who's got a gun, who's willing to shoot it. This was all one of those heat of the moment things where it happened in a second, even according to Mr. Davis. Door comes open. And then once Waller sees that the person on the ground is someone with an older man and a man with his hands up, he stops shooting. But
do we have any information about the interval between the eighth shot and that final shot as he was getting out of the car?
Not that I'm aware of. This whole thing happened very quickly. If you look at, I think it's document 45-1, which is from the radio transmissions with the dispatchers. At 16:33, an officer says he has a vehicle coming down the road headed toward him. At 16:34, which is only 1 minute later, officer advises subject to step out of vehicle. 16:39, 5 minutes later, they're advised that the subject is down. This is all happening in a matter of minutes. And really, from when they say they have the vehicle coming down and they are advising the vehicle someone to step out of the vehicle, that's a minute that all of this happened in. So you're talking about an incredibly small amount of time to make momentous decisions. And this court has always been clear that you have to make allowance for the fact that in those rapidly changing, chaotic circumstances, officers may make mistakes. And clearly, Lieutenant Waller made one here. But he's dealing with a vehicle. The gunfire's been coming out of. They're trying to catch someone who's very deadly, who they know is in that truck. The door comes open. The truck stops. The door comes open. He takes a shot at the door. That's Mr. Davis's testimony, and that's Lieutenant Waller's testimony.
Is there any dispute, or I should say, what is the dispute about whether cars were hit first or police fired first?
I think there was, again, it's all happening so rapidly, I'm not sure that's absolutely clear, but I think there was a shot at right before or as the cars were being hit for the first time.
Do you remember whose testimony that was?
Not right off. There were about 12 different law enforcement officers who were deposed that day about the events of that day, and it's not clear to me as I stand here.
Do you think it matters whether the police cars were hit first or the shots were fired first?
Do you mean the shots from the truck?
No, I mean the shots from the officers.
I'm not sure it makes a huge difference because they've got to stop this truck before it gets out to the main road, but I think the testimony is pretty clear, actually, that the officers were hiding behind the cars until they were being knocked aside, and then they had to scramble out into the open to avoid being crushed by the cars, and that's when the shooting started. I think that part's pretty clear.
Okay.
I don't think that this is something that needs to go to a jury for them to decide things, because reasonableness, as this court has said, is a question of law.
Right. I think your opponent's brief has occasionally said that it's whether a reasonable jury could conclude mm-hmm. that a reasonable officer could take this action. Is that the standard, or are we to decide reasonableness?
You all are to decide reasonableness.
And then the jury, if there's a dispute of fact, then the jury would decide that, right?
Yes, a jury exists to decide facts, but reasonableness is a legal question. And as this court and the Supreme Court has repeatedly said, reasonableness is a fact-bound morass. And there's simply no case close enough to this one saying that these circumstances are always unconstitutional that would have given these law officers guidance in how to decide this in the chaotic moment that they were dealing with.
But what if we said if the officers were, if all of the officers were aware that there was a hostage being forced to take this action, or that it was a hostage who was the one being shot, then that would be unreasonable. Would the jury have the opportunity to conclude whether the officers were aware of who they were shooting?
I mean, I don't think it's necessary to go there on the facts of this case, because even if they know that there's a hostage and that the hostage is the driver of the truck, it's also clear from the circumstances that they are dealing with that hostage, that poor unfortunate hostage, has been turned into a weapon. You know, and in this situation, the truck, at least as far as when it's plowing into those cars, the truck is itself being used as a weapon, which means that the driver is effectively the weapon. And, you know, Mr. Davis is certainly entitled to all of our sympathy for having to go through this circumstance, but, you know, he's dealing with, and we're all dealing with, this very bad man, this very violent, dangerous man who has to be stopped, and he is the one who is using Mr. Davis as a weapon to get him out of there and out to this main road that's nearby. So they've got to stop Ryan Arnold, which means they've got to stop the truck, which means they've got to stop, unfortunately, Mr. Davis.
What about that? Let's say we agree with you on the first 8 shots. What about that last shot? Could it go to a jury to question whether the officer knew that it was the hostage who was getting out of the car rather than the assailant, once the car at that point had already, the truck had already stopped?
I think given the speed with which the circumstance was happening, no. I mean, even, like I said, even based on Mr. Davis's testimony himself, I mean, truck stops, door opens, shot happens. He's not even on the ground. The shot comes as the door is open and he's going at it. It's not like he's standing on the ground like this. And it's not like he's saying, I'm surrendering, I'm not the bad guy. It's all in one moment when they're still trying to capture this very bad man. And because of where Lieutenant Waller is standing, which is different from where the others are, and he can't see what's happening as well, I don't think so under those circumstances, under the chaos of this. And again, the law repeatedly says, the Supreme Court said it in Graham, this court has said it in Glenn versus City of Columbus. Reasonable officers may incorrectly perceive the seriousness of a threat. And I think that's what we're dealing with here with Lieutenant Waller. If the court doesn't have any further questions, I will sit down. Thank you.
Your Honors, I'd like to begin by answering a couple of questions that Judge Grant asked. One is the question of whether the officer shot before the cars were hit or after. I believe it was Ryan Arnold who testified that they began shooting before the cars were hit. The officers themselves testified that it was after. And the positioning of the shots is another important fact in that analysis and in general for the analysis of the events.
But didn't Mr. Davis testify that he had hit the police cars before the police opened fire?
Yes, I believe that's correct, Your Honor.
And so, but you're wanting to rely on Arnold's testimony that's different from your client's? Am I misunderstanding you?
I was just answering your question, okay. Your Honor.
But it sounds like there is a dispute in the record between those two perspectives, right?
That's correct. I mean, the jury could believe either one. The question ultimately isn't, it's a material fact, but it's not a dispositive fact, because the question then also becomes, well, once the cars were hit, at what speed were they hit? Maybe as slow as 2 miles an hour. Then he's pushing tons of metal out of the way with this diesel engine in first gear going uphill on a dirt road, pushing them into surrounding clear-cut fields. And the officers all get out of the way and fire from the sides of the truck and even from the rear of the truck. One shotgun slug went through the exhaust stack, which comes up the back corner of the cab on the driver's side, and blew a hole that big in it.
But weren't they also trying to keep the truck which had a known assailant who had been violent earlier in the day? Weren't they trying to keep that truck from endangering the public too?
Okay, so there is a perceived threat to the public, and that's an understandable fear. There was a threat to the public in Vaughn as well. And this court still held that the officer did not enjoy qualified immunity for shooting into the vehicle at the occupants. But the threat to Don, who is also a member of the public, is an imminent threat created by the officers. They're shooting directly at him. And if they know that he's an innocent member of the public, it's not reasonable to shoot and perhaps kill a member of the public who's actually present in order to prevent possible remote harm to members of the public who are not present. Remember, this is a logging site way out in rural Oglethorpe County where cell phones and police radios are spotty. I beg your pardon, Your Honor?
Your colleague said that the shooting occurs within a quarter of a mile of a busy intersection. Is that true?
Busy for rural Oglethorpe County.
Right.
I believe that's true. Now, at a nearby intersection, the law enforcement also, the sheriff's offices and the state patrol also had set up a command center with an armored vehicle specifically for the purpose of preventing Ryan Arnold's escape. So, and they could have slowed or at least impaired the truck's progress out into the public by shooting the tires. They don't have to kill a person that they know is an innocent hostage. Or maim a person whom they know is an innocent hostage in order to accomplish that goal.
Didn't the officers testify that I can't recall the specifics, but that for whatever reason, that didn't seem to be an effective option?
Trooper Browder testified that he believed the truck could still keep going with flat tires. It weighs 84,000 pounds. It has two steering tires in the front of the cab. If you hit those, it might be able to move, but it can't steer because they're flat. So the jury could find that even if he believes, well, the jury could disbelieve that he thought that at the time and could think that's just litigation contention.
Do we have any testimony that establishes the opposite of what that is saying?
Absolutely,
no, I know nothing about cars and trucks, so I may think, well, sure. But do we have any testimony that a jury could rely on to misbelieve that?
Yes, Your Honor. Plaintiffs retained a ballistics expert, a former GBI officer, who actually took one of the tires and shot a weapon just like Browder's at it in Don's yard and blew holes in the tire. Also testified that the engine block would have exploded if it had been hit with that particular weapon, which was a very, very high-powered rifle.
So does it matter for these purposes whether it was possible or whether the officers thought it was possible?
For Trooper Browder, I think it would depend on whether the officer reasonably believed it was possible and whether he actually made that mistake. I mean, the defense of reasonable mistake, which the officers assert here, depends on a question of historical fact, which is whether the mistake actually was made. For example, whether they thought Don was Arnold. If they didn't think Don was Arnold, then whether they could reasonably have thought he was Arnold is not a relevant point. And I think the defendants confused those two points in their briefs. Reasonable mistake is a defense that depends on the assertion that they made a mistake, which depends on the facts that were known to them. And it's very clear under Supreme Court precedent and this court's precedents that officers are accountable for the facts they knew.
So what questions would you put to the jury? What questions would a jury need to decide to know whether there was a problem here?
For Browder and Waller, the jury clearly, and this is honestly the first time I've thought about what the verdict form would look like, Your Honor, so forgive me if I don't have a complete list, but at a minimum, I think the jurors would need to decide whether Browder and Waller heard the radio dispatch. Browder admits that he did. Waller says he didn't, but he could have. Then they would have to decide whether Browder and Waller saw two people in the truck. Because if they did, then it doesn't even matter whether they heard the radio dispatch. Third, I think they would have to decide where the officers were and what the imminence of the threat to the officers was at the time the officers fired at Don.
So you would say that if both officers knew for one reason or the other that there were two people in the truck, and the officers, by the time they shot, had escaped personal danger, you would say that that means that Mr. Davis wins because their actions were, under that set of facts, we could say as a matter of law, it's unreasonable to shoot. Is that your argument?
Well, I'm not asking Your Honor to say that it's unreasonable as a matter of law.
Aren't we the ones who decide reasonableness, and then the jury decides whether the facts meet that standard? I don't think I'd want to ask a jury whether it was reasonable. I think I'd ask a jury what happened.
Well, in that case, the specific questions of fact on which the reasonableness determination depend would perhaps be submitted to the jury as special interrogatories. And so then I guess Your Honor's question would be, what is the list of those interrogatories? On what facts would the court's determination of reasonableness depend? And I think it really depends on what the officers knew. Whether they knew that there was a material chance that the person they were deliberately shooting was an innocent person. And if they knew that, then they have an obligation not to shoot an innocent person. And so if they believe that there's a material chance they are shooting an innocent person, it's not reasonable for them to do that. Then they have to think about whether they have an alternative. And they had alternatives. They didn't like those alternatives, or they didn't choose those alternatives. But the question for the jury would be whether those alternatives were, in fact, feasible. Browder thought it wasn't feasible. The jury might say, well, no, that's not a reasonable mistake. They were feasible. Your weapon that you should have known how to use and you should have known the power of, in fact, could have pierced the engine block, in fact, could have pierced the tires, in fact, could have stopped the truck. And if you didn't know that, that's not reasonable. Now, I want to go back and say, and answer your question, the question of reasonable mistake, I think, is a jury question. It's a highly fact-bound determination. And it depends on whether the officer, in fact, made that mistake. The question of reasonableness in terms of the objective standard that that Harlow versus Fitzgerald imposes, the objective reasonable officer standard, that is a question for the court. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Moore. Now I'll call